This is the CC Radio Podcast.
Welcome to episode 237 of the Countdown Podcast. Kids, have you been watching the movies? Or are you planning to watch some movies? Because Paul and I, we've been movie peeping all week. And today we're going to tell you what to check out and what to avoid. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. And I've been movie peeping, as Wayne puts it, more than just the last week.
Oh no, he's been doing his whole life.
Leave it to the last second. Like,
yeah, well,
people.
Suck my balls, man. I already watch a lot of shows on the show already. Damn it, she got time to take. But I'm happy to.
One of the two people in this room has a full-time job.
Oh, fuck off!
One of the two people in this room has a family. One of those two people doesn't rethink the last
second. You make a compelling point, I will say.
Anyway, welcome to the show. We count down movies and sometimes television from in order of auspices, so you don't have to. And today we are doing a frequent show that we do, episode that we do, which is the top 10, last 10, where we count down 10 of the last films that we've seen from worst to best, giving you a bunch of films that we're going to shit all over and tell you to avoid, and a bunch of films that we loved or liked a lot that we're going to recommend to you.
Toots.
So we run the gamut in this particular show, and that's why it tends to be a fairly popular one, because you get to hear us at our best and our worst.
Right.
And usually along the way we disagree about something the other person has said.
Hence the worst.
Yeah. So it's a well-established show. You can go back and check a whole bunch of them in our archives if you like to get the gist of this one. But before we go any further, then, let's do the little segment that has been reintroduced to the show, where we do a bit of...
Who wants a recap? Who wants a recap?
The Recount is the show where we recount the old shit that we did yesterday and stuff. Sorry, it's a segment in a show.
Wayne is obsessed with the word show. Long-time listeners will know.
They're all shows.
Anyway, all shows to Wayne.
Except for the segment. Yeah, okay.
Anyway, yes. Referring to last week's show.
There you go.
The top 10 movies that taught us about dating, which we weren't sure how it was going to go.
Yeah, let's just fucking talk about this for a second,
shall
we?
It was Wayne's big idea.
Yeah, so Paul's like, you ass. And then... how'd it go?
Well, we got a lot of feedback from people, including some of our friends. We got a text message last night from friend Shane, who said, thanks for the trip down memory lane. I caught up with a bunch of our friends last night, and a couple of them brought it up, saying that was a very interesting episode.
Really? Was it chicks?
No, it was the men.
Oh, it could. Yeah, good.
But we did get some feedback from some people, which you should hear about, Wayne. Uh-huh. First of all, not from our Facebook listening community, but from your sister.
Oh my God, what has she said now? She texted me.
Mel sent a message to me saying, why did you let Wayne talk about his views on women?
What the fuck? Okay. She texted me. She said, Wayne, I listened to your podcast and it's not okay. And I went, what? And she's like, it's triggering all the shit that I used to think when I was a kid. It's weird, right?
She then did add, that aside, you two are actually comedy gold, which is nice.
Oh, that's
I did seek her permission to say that. She said I could. So I did apologize, and so I tried to talk Wayne out.
No, don't apologize.
And he wouldn't let me. From the Facebook listening community, there are links in the show notes if you want to join in. A bunch of great people who talk about all things to do with movies and television. First of all, from Cy or Wazow, best episode ever, piss my pants with laughter.
There you go.
Stephen Croon said, amazing episode, boys. Absolutely loved it. Thank you for that.
Thanks, man.
Chris O'Neill said, great episode, guys. Enjoyed it very much. As unique as we think we are, it's crazy that we all share so many of the same dating / breaking up experiences.
There, it's relatable. It's a relatable episode.
Except for Wayne. He's just special. Lols.
Yes. That also is true.
Not too soon. Matt Michelle said, great episode. Way more fun than the boring ass best PG-13.
Oh, foot in your ass.
Well, the download numbers would tend to disagree, but thank you for that much. Now, this one, last one I wanted to share. Kristen Arcaro said, Paul couldn't be more on point saying Wayne gets away with so much shit he comes out with. I consider myself your general crazed feminist the best of times, and yet when I'm listening, more often than not, I'm not offended by it. And I'm just like, oh, classic Wayne.
That's not me. It's because you're my peeps. All right? That's all you're listening are my peeps because you're still listening. You get it.
So if you haven't heard last week's episode, do check it out and let us know what you think. That's it for this week's feedback. No vote last week. I did promise we wouldn't have one, and we didn't. So I'm not quite sure how that would have gone. It could have been
I don't know how any of them go, man. No. So
and obviously, top 10 last 10s, we don't compare because we're not picking from the same pool of things. So next week, we'll be back with the next vote, which we'll talk about that episode at the end. of today's show. On the other side of this music cue, then, we'll get on with it.
Oh, I finally decided my future lies behind the yellow brick road.
The top 10, the last 10. And we've already explained it. This is where we count down films from worst to best, and we'll let you know we crossed the divide from a not recommend to actual recommend.
Absolutely.
For you. Wayne, how is your list looking this week?
For a change, it's not like they were all wicked movies, but more were wicked than shit. Okay. Usually they're mostly shit and there's one good one.
Last few of these, you've been very low been really quality. Bad. I would say I've got a bunch of shit films, but I've got some very good films. And I've been big the last couple of months saying that 2019 is turning into a real disappointment.
Yeah.
There's a little rallying point around the top of my list. So
all right,
we will get there in due course.
Okay, all right.
Why don't you lead us away then, Wayne? You're number 10, the worst film that you have recently seen.
Yeah, this one sucks, everyone.
By the way, we haven't spoken about the podcast, so none of the films we've reviewed already.
Yeah, nothing you've heard about from us. My number 10 is a movie called Late Night. Now, this is...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay, so it stars Emma Thompson, Mindy Kaling, and John Lithgow, among others. And it's... I saw a lot of outdoor advertising for this. It's basically about Emma Thompson, who's a famous late night talk show host. And she's presented kind of like a female Dave Letterman, that level of fame, I guess. And she gets pressure to hire a female staff writer for her show because she's people think that she hates women because she's like such a strong woman in a man place and she only hires men so she can grab on them. Long story.
Okay.
But she has to hire a female, so she just picks the first one, and it's Mindy Kaling, who has no actual writing experience, but she wants to get into the industry. So
excellent.
It's kind of about how Emma Thompson, who's
comedy,
a whole...
Drama, comedy?
It's definitely presented as a comedy drama, but it's kind of neither. It's just like
it's a wet fart.
It's a wet fart is what it is. Emma Thompson's like this supposedly horrible person, and she unites with this one female in her business as she sort of becomes a better person. It's crap. And so all of the jokes and the situations in the film, they just don't ring true. So there's always she's doing monologues or something. And she sort of starts to bomb. That's the scene. Then she comes back up with these like 4 or 5 really killer jokes, but they're all shit jokes. Like when she comes back and she does a shit joke, and everyone's like, "Yeah!" It doesn't feel real.
Right, yeah.
And it's just ugh. And it just goes on and on. It's a shame because I thought this looked really interesting. I loved movies or shows about productions of shows, like The Interview or fucking 30 Rock and all that sort of shit, right?
Yep.
And this is none of that. All of the good shit is out of this. It was just completely a miss hit. It sucked. It would have been cool to watch if it didn't suck so much. How about that? So yeah, Late Night.
Score.
36.
Okay, so yeah. Everything's at least 2 stars and above for you.
You know it doesn't work like this, but yes, sure.
Your fucking logic, Paul, has no room
in
this podcast.
It doesn't, it really doesn't.
My number 10 is worse than that. It is a piece of shit horror film, which you'll be very shocked to hear, I'm sure, Wayne.
Not a surprise. No, not huge.
I'm watching a lot of horror films, not just because it's Halloween coming, which is obviously very big for our North American listeners, and indeed for a lot of the UK people, and some people here in Australia sort of starting to embrace it. But it's also the epic film, guys, 31 Days of Horror movie watching challenge, which I get involved with every year, and that's watching 31 horror films through the course of the month.
God, what a shit assignment.
I am, of course, ahead of the curve.
Yes, of course, you're ahead of the curve.
I'm nowhere near winning it. There's a couple of people who are already close to 31 as we stand recording on October, 13th.
So Freaks.
I'm talking about Rob Zombie's 3 from Hell, the third film in the Firefly... So... Sherry Moon Zombie and Sid Haig and Bill Moseley are this trio of mass murderers who just ran amok and killed people in House of 1,000 Corpses first and then in Devil's Rejects. And the end of Devil's Rejects, they were killed in this fiery shootout of the cops finally caught up to them and blew them all away. Except this film starts, and this is a good indicator of how shit the film is, like, here we are 10 or 12 years later, whatever it is, from Devil's Rejects. And they have news reports talking about they're all rated a 1,000,001 chance of survival. Cut to next report. Well, they're pulling through and coming out of their comas and they're going to be incarcerated forever for their crimes of killing however many people. Now, then the sad part of this film is that Sid Haig was very ill at the time this was filmed. Yeah. And he actually passed away about two, three weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in real life, which is very sad. A bit of a horror icon.
Is he?
Anyway, this is a completely pointless addition to the film. Devil's Rejects.
They all sound pointless.
Okay.
Really?
House of Thousand Corpses wasn't my cup of tea. It's just too out there, as most of Rob Zombie's films are. But Devil's Rejects was good. This is just complete and utter nonsense. It wants you to identify with and come to support these three mass murderers, serial killers, and it doesn't work. They're all so over the top and kooky and out there, and Sherry Moon Zombie's playing like this sort of 70s flower child. He's like, oh man, hey, oh no worries. Yeah, snap your neck type.
Yeah, person. This is shit. This is already shit. I already know it's crap.
I would never recommend to you. I don't recommend to anyone. Even Rob Zombie fans. Even a horror film. Even Rob Zombie fans would struggle, I think, that is saying to justify something. Its purpose. It is just meaningless, and it ends in an even more open, a way more open way than Devil's Rejects, implying there could be yet more. And I'm just like, fuck this piece of shit.
Let me ask you something. If you were a Hollywood director, have you seen Bowfinger?
Yeah, but a long time ago.
Okay, so that's about like really shitty production houses that make crappy straight-to-video fucking kung fu films and shit. Would you ever be one of those if it meant you could be a working director?
Well, I guess it depends how much you get paid, right?
I mean, let's say, I think these guys do okay. You do as well as a dentist.
Rob Zombie's rich beyond reckoning.
So kind of, right? Yeah, so kind of, you'll be like a millionaire at least, right?
Yeah, oh, at least.
All right, okay.
Way better off than that.
So I think that would be good. The only problem we would have, or I would have maybe, was like, when you make a piece of shit film, and then it's like, who do you call to that premiere? You want your friends to see it, right? And you know it's a piece of shit.
Well, I would imagine if we made a film, it would just be, we've made a film, which we did, and it was, you know, piece of shit, nothing, no budget, and we did go to our friends to see it, because who's made a film?
That's true.
And if you had $100,000 budget, or and this is obviously bigger than that, I don't know what the budget is, to be honest, probably 3-4 million maybe.
Yeah.
You're gonna churn something out. Look, there are some artistic moments in it which have some style and the like, and there's some good gore and some good practical effects.
Yeah.
It's not without merit.
Yeah.
But it's just the idea of the film is completely misguided and unnecessary.
Yep.
Completely unnecessary. Why do we resurrect these characters? Because he's got nothing better to say. And he has made some original films and they've sucked as well. So it's not like 31.
Is he known to be ass?
Well, he has a real following because of his music career and the like. So
okay, this is crap.
That's the worst film I saw of late. It's Three from Hell.
Three from Hell. Yeah. Okay, my number 9. Some people may have an issue with the lowness of this one. Let's see how Paul thinks. Rocket Man.
Ooh.
Now, let me say this. This is where even at number 9 is where I go, I may or may not recommend this film. So it's not like the bad one was Late Night. Most of them up here, I could think about recommending to some people. So this Rocket Man, I heard it was a musical, so I was a bit wary, okay? Because I don't like musicals. Some people think I do, but like the whole that moment where people are talking normally and all of a sudden they break into song, I don't know why that is a thing. Like that is an awkward moment and I don't like it. So whenever you have a musical doing that, whatever. This is still a musical, but it somehow was handled quite well. It was showed in a relatively, like, it shows his youth and struggles he had with his family and stuff. And it was good to see that. But when they all of a sudden jump into song,
I agree.
It's really surreal.
I'm exactly with you. It just completely lost me that moment early on the film when now he's a boy and he's singing, he's walking through his neighborhood and everyone's jumping in behind him. I'm just like, oh.
And all this, but you know what is what I thought you might like about those shots is whenever there's a surreal, it goes into one of his songs, one of his musical numbers, it's usually a one shot that lasts the whole length of the number, which is kind of
good. The
Crocodile
Rock song was really good.
That was cool, right? So there's some really...
That one I could get behind as being more metaphorical because, you know, he's just elated that the song's going over so well with the crowd and kind of that's what that said to me.
Yeah, yeah. But
the one where it's showing, can't remember what the song was now, at the very early on in the film, I'm like, ugh.
Well, the first few numbers were by that kid. So it's like, I think the performances are great. Taron Egerton does great stuff. I'm actually a huge Elton John music fan.
I wasn't, I have to say, but I've kind of gotten more on board other than Yellow Brick Road.
By the way, everyone, Paul and I do a cracking karaoke version of Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, okay?
We
won't do it, okay? But I'm telling you now.
We could sing us out at the end of the song.
Oh, that would be really funny, but I don't see how it goes.
At the end of the episode, sorry.
Let me tell you something. One time in like, we were in some karaoke bar. This is a good 12 years ago.
Well, it was more than that. I think it was early 20s.
Shit. So it's like 20 years ago. Yep. All right. So we're in this karaoke bar and we're not actually good.
It was with a mate of mine, Steve.
Yeah, Steve. And he knows this. And
he was studying music.
That's right. Which means there were music students in the crowd. Yeah. In particular, this table of three music students, which were all quite fetching, as I recall. Right?
So I don't remember that much of a detail.
I do. Anyway, two blondes, one brunette. Anyway, we went up and...
Just saying.
We went up and did Goodbye Yellow Road, and it was the that bit, right? That kind of killed it. And we nailed it. The music students came up to us and said that was the best one of the night. They're music students!
Regular listeners are now going, hang on, I believe that are you, but Paul?
Don't I think about it? I don't know how you started sucking all of that. You were fine back then. What have you been doing?
If I can match a pitch, I'm okay.
Yeah.
So I think I probably just dug in underneath you.
Possibly, but it worked. I mean, so there you are. Sorry, that's a bit off the topic.
So, okay, look, I also saw this film, and I didn't, I'm not, because I'm not a big fan of Elton John's music, or I wasn't. I've grown, some of it's grown on me since.
Oh, yeah, it is a
playlist. But I did think Taron Egerton's performance was great, and I thought his singing, because here's where I really give this film props over Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
He sang.
Yes.
They didn't just port in Elton John's songs and have him mime to them. He sang.
Yeah.
And that's really impressive.
That is good. And no, he, you know what was weird? I was listening to it and I'm like, he actually doesn't sound like Elton John. He's just doing his version of Elton John. And that's fine. That's perfectly fine. Like, it's a good way to go. And he even moves, like, I believed he was Elton John when he was playing, like, even the older version and this and that. Yep. He was really, really good.
Yeah, I would put this around the, for me, it's sort of 2.5-star type level. But if you're an Elton John fan, this would blow you away.
This is it. If you, because there's actually nods to Elton John in there, like throwing something through a window. He was the original rock star who threw a TV through the hotel window.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, he was like the quintessential. He did it all the time for like 2 years, right? So that's just kind of cool. But if you are, like if you're an Elton John fan, you'll love this thing. I thought it was good, but it wasn't for me. Like, it just got too surreal. Like, it just didn't, and like, not enough. But
some people love the shit out of this.
Look, I can see how some people would, because what's handled is handled well. But yeah, not quite for me.
Yep. All right. Fair enough. Can get behind that particular one. Your number 9 sounds a lot better than my number 9, which is the film we almost reviewed for this podcast.
What?
The Kitchen.
Oh, good. Tell me what was this about? Because Paul, please tell everyone.
Yeah. So basically, I had put this on the agenda to review, and I got to see it before Wayne did, and walked out of there and just said, "Don't bother. Let's do, I think, Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance instead." So we watched the first episode or two of that instead. This is directed by Andrea Berloff, and it basically is based on a comic. A graphic novel, and it's set in the 1970s in Hell's Kitchen, and it follows the partners of three Irish mob guys who are arrested by the police and sent away for 2-3 years. I can't remember what it is. They're kind of left high and dry with families, or just, you know, to survive.
I remember the trailer for this now.
And they pretty much approach the mob boss in the area and say, well, because the understanding is when you go away, they look after your family.
That's right.
But this guy's such a prick, he gives them almost nothing.
Yep. Yep.
And so they're left with no choice but to kind of try and take over from where their husbands left off and going against the Irish mob boss dude.
Wow.
And so that sets it off to go for me.
Yeah, so it's a,
It stars Elizabeth Moss, Tiffany Haddish, and Melissa McCarthy's the main character in the film. And it's nice to see her playing dramatic.
It's a dramatic role, isn't it? Because I saw the trailer. Oh, she's playing actually dramatic.
Yeah, and Elizabeth Moss good in everything. Tiffany Haddish, you know, I can take or leave her.
Yeah, yeah.
But Domhnall Gleeson also pops up in it. I wasn't aware he was in the film, and he pops up in a significant role as well. It just takes some real logical leaps, this film, and it makes no sense at all. So by half an hour in, there's really one logical way. If this had happened in anything remotely approaching the real world, and this tries to ground itself as being realistic. That's the thing. This is not, they're not like suddenly crack shots. They're not like Charlie's Angels, or they're not superhuman intelligence or anything like those lines. They're just regular partners of regular people,
trying
to make it work. And instead of being stepped on by the mafia or the Irish mob, they kind of are allowed to just operate.
Yeah, see, this is it.
And straight away you're like, what?
Why they didn't work for it.
Why are we here?
Yeah.
This would not have happened.
Absolutely. Once you have that moment in a movie where you're like, fuck off, that would not, they've lost you.
Then their characterizations get very one note.
Yeah.
And they're trying their hardest, and that's why I didn't hate on this film. I think even Tiffany Haddish is fine in the film. The three leads are good, and it's enough to get me through, so I didn't hate it the way that the main critics, the world seem to have really shat on this movie.
They all shat on it, okay.
Yeah, really. This is up for likely be up for Razzies, and no one particularly liked this movie. Goes places towards the end of the film, which obviously won't spoil on a top 10 last 10. We don't do that. That also, it's pretty hard to buy into.
Yeah, I see.
Inevitably, the husbands get released, and then how that sort of plays out from there.
So bad script.
Very bad.
Yeah. Okay.
Very poor script, and I cannot recommend this film. But as a curiosity, as a, you know, it could be on the top, the worst 10 films of the year for a lot of people. If it got them to mind, be very, very low on that list. It's nowhere near as egregiously bad as some things we've seen.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. All right. My number 8 is one I will whip through because it's a very audience-specific one. It is an animated Batman film called Batman Hush. Okay. Now, this is...
I watched this one.
Did you?
Yeah. As part of the to finish up the movie watching challenge earlier in the year, I realized that, and following on from Daniel from the IMDb Journey podcast, that these DC films are all 70 to 80
minutes. Yeah, they're short.
So they're the ones to watch to burn through a whole bunch in a day. And so I got a bit of a taste for them, and hence Hush is a newer one. Yeah.
Well, this is actually developed from a very popular just sort of graphic novel or part of the set of the cartoon, of the comics. And I watched it because it was curious, because even though I'm a geek for Batman, I tend to not watch these animated films. And I haven't seen one for about 5 years.
Oh, geez, in that case, I've seen way more than you.
No, you probably have. And the plot is that there's this mysterious bad guy who's trying to kill Batman, and he manages to use like the Joker, the Riddler, and all the other like, you know, Batman bad guys in creating the havoc. The big thing, though, is what I learned about these PG-13 films that are ostensibly made for kids, is that they're not really for kids. First of all...
This one's pretty violent.
Dude, all the characters are cussing. Commissioner Gordon says, oh shit, what's this? And fucking Batgirl does, and Catwoman does, and they're all saying shit, shit, shit. I'm like, okay, fine. And Batman and Catwoman fuck each other like rabbits in this movie.
There's a pretty heavy sexual element.
And it's played like a motherfucker. And he's like, she's just like basically coming up to him while they're all still in costume. And he's like, yeah, what up? And he's in. And I'm like, yo, yo, yo.
Batman doesn't do that.
Batman doesn't even like pussy. I'm not sure. Like, he's supposed to be...
Maybe he doesn't like Catwoman's
pussy. Yeah, well, he does. He really does. The character is supposed to be sort of celibate, at least I understood, right? And he only ever nailed, like, Talia al Ghul and a few other people. But, like, he's fucking swinging dick, man.
Can we have a discussion about the definition of celibate?
What is celibate?
It is not when you bang just a few people. It's when you don't bang.
Yeah, okay. I think the idea is he has banged these people, but his gins tends to not bang anyone.
Okay.
So, which is not celibate, I guess.
Yes.
All right, fine. has bouts of celibacy. So anyway, yeah, look. The
bouts
movie-
of celibacy. I think we all have those.
Yeah, we all
do. Dry spells.
Exactly. It's called calluses.
It's called my partner's upset with me.
And so, exactly. But yeah, sorry. Look, it was fine. If you're a Batman watcher, you should watch this stuff. But everyone else, just forget about it. I just wanted to mention it because I was like, ooh, they're seeing shit.
Maybe it's because this was the one I've watched after the movie watching challenge and I had a couple of months break. But I like this one a lot more than a lot of the piece of shit DC films.
There's
that
a bit of, it's violent. Yeah. Like, and it's like, oh, good, make
and
it violent.
And I thought the mystery of who it was and how it was happening was pretty good.
Yeah, it's a popular arc. Yeah, so, yeah,
I liked it. I didn't mind that one. Probably would be higher on my list if I had to put it on here.
Oh, really? Okay.
It certainly would be higher than my number 8,
which is
another cinematically released one that made around about, from memory, $500 million around the world. It's Pokemon Detective Pikachu.
What?
Directed by Rob Letterman, starring, of course, Rai Rai. And Justice Smith, who is the guy from... one of the Lost World films, the most recent, Fallen Kingdom.
Okay.
A really annoying dude.
I think I sort of remember
in that. Yeah, terrible character. Look, he's not as annoying in this, but it's not a good film. Unless you're, I assume, a Pokemon fan. I reckon if you're a Pokemon fan, this is absolutely for you.
Because there's lots of references and stuff?
To see them come to life like this and live in a world where Pokemon and humans interact just normally. You know, after that becomes kind of this noir kind of thriller.
Noir?
Very light on the noir.
Yeah, okay.
And more on the mystery side of things. And it's investigating his disappearance / death of his father and how that all happened.
As in, so wait, is Rai Rai Pikachu?
Yes.
And he just talks and he's his voice?
Yes.
So
there's almost no Rai Rai in this film.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So does it not work because it's not funny, or does it not work because it's shit?
Oh, it's just not for me. I don't understand. Like, I think if you were into Pokemon, this film's probably great.
Well, people that do that Pokemon Go, I still see, like, people running around the parks and shit and the virtual reality shit with you have to catch a Pokemon. I'm like, what the fuck? So
that was all the rage 3 years
ago. It was huge, right? Yeah. Anyway, okay.
I put this right split down the middle. I could see that, look, they sunk some money into it, and it looks pretty good most of the time. Yeah. The effects, the way it all works together. The mystery is okay in terms of how it all resolves. Fairly predictable after a certain point.
Can you tell me, is Rai Rai funny? Is he funny? Or is his lines not funny? Or is he making... Is there anything that's working here?
Yeah, like I said, it's all okay. I think I chuckled 2 or 3 times in the film. It's not that funny.
Okay.
But again, maybe I'm missing a lot of the humor because I'm not a Pokemon player / fan.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I can see where they make it, though.
Should you see it to make your 10 best... No, it'll just fall somewhere in the middle.
So no recommend on this one?
No.
Got it. All right.
Unless you're a Pokemon fan, in which case you would have already seen it and you're probably annoyed at me right now.
Yeah, fair enough. Or a Pokemon Go fan, in which case you hate me. So, all right. Everyone, my number 7 is El Camino, which is the Netflix follow-up to the Breaking Bad series.
Didn't think we'd get to do this today, but...
Really? I don't know what the thing in the end was, but I love it. Oh, I see. That is not how the slide goes. The worst slide guitar ever. It's like, well, anywho, anyone who's a Breaking Bad fan has likely already seen this film, or maybe not.
Well, it's only been out for about 48 hours, but yeah.
Is that so? Yep. Okay, for the uninitiated, Breaking Bad's a series which everyone considers maybe the best ever made, except for The Wire, is what I hear a lot.
Top five,
yeah. And this is about one of the characters, and it's an epilogue to what happened to this character after the finale of the series. In this case, it's Jesse Pinkman.
We're not going to talk around that part of it. At least.
Yeah, we're not. Yeah,
because if you haven't watched Breaking Bad since it finished in 2012,
yeah, you don't
then
care.
You don't care enough.
Okay, he escapes. Jesse.
No, 2014.
14. Okay, he escapes to like a hail of machine gun fire, and everyone's dead, and like you know, he's the only one who survives, and he just drives away. So now it shows you what happens after he drove away, and I think it's not new or exciting. This show, it's just like another Breaking Bad episode almost, but. It's not bad. It's actually well done. I found that there's some good moments there. I had forgotten a lot of the series. So I hadn't. So did you... There's a dude in it which says, I was wondering when you were going to recognize me. Mm-hmm. Was he from Breaking Bad, the series? Or was that something I was supposed to not know?
We got to be careful here for spoilers for El Camino.
That's vague, we're
going to spoil Breaking Bad, yes. If Wayne hasn't already, but we will not spoil El Camino. They, not rewrite, but they fill in some gaps in the series with some... scenes that we didn't see.
Yes, because before. Exactly. Yep, which is good, and that part was good, and
which includes the person you're referring to.
Yes, exactly. There's something that's hanging over your head when you watch it, and you get the answer quite well. So fine. I found it was shot in kind of a confusing way because maybe I'm not very intelligent. What they are doing in this?
How straight were you when watching this?
Fine, I was totally fine. Right? Well, it's mostly fine. It was. You know how they mix the flashback with the current day?
Yes,
right?
Great.
No, it is good, but for a second I was like, wait, oh, he's got a cap now. Oh, that was a flashback, right? Okay, maybe I was a little under the weather. All right, so it took me a second. So I thought it was really well done.
Why is it down here at 7?
Because I wasn't crazy impressed with it.
Well, I wasn't crazy impressed with it, but I thought it was a very good coda to the series. I enjoyed my time here.
Yeah,
I think it wrapped things up really well for Jesse Pinkman's character.
Because a lot of people were like...
That it didn't. The series didn't.
I mean, yeah. It was about fucking...
Walter White.
Yeah.
Yes, the series is about Walter White. And it was very ambiguous what sort of would have happened to him after that. So to see that depicted, and yes, it's simplistic that his trauma is really... restricted to the first sort of 30 minutes of the film and all the rest of it. But as far as a 120-minute film or whatever it is goes, I really enjoyed my time with it. A little slow in a couple of places.
Little slow.
That's all right, though, because there are some big moments in this film.
Oh, huge moments.
Which I really enjoyed. I like the sort of Jesse Plemons, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
He's a big role in this, and you kind of get past it
there. The weight.
That he's about half again the weight he was in the show and all the rest of it.
Well, it's like, oh, we're just going to have to play it like that.
But he just plays a sociopath so well.
He is such a good actor, and even when you see him in like other films, like even the Game Night, he was good in that. Yeah. And he's just playing this one note.
And he was in Fargo season 2, and he's really good in that.
He's a really good character, actor.
Sympathetic,
right?
Actor. Yeah, he's excellent. And then you get a lot of, and I won't mention who they are, you get a lot of sort of surprise cameos from past cast members in part of those flashbacks and the like. And then I have to say this, though, and I will spoil his entrance into
you
the
sure?
film.
You sure? All right.
Robert Forster.
Oh, wait, what does he do?
Robert Forster is the guy who owned the vacuum cleaner store, to say right?
Yeah.
He died on Friday.
Did he?
Same day the film was released, he died at 78 of brain cancer. So a big shout out to...
That guy's a legend, man.
Yeah, just in so many films and apparently, and all the reports consistently through his career, so they've all come out again now, is he's just the nicest man.
Yeah.
And they cast him so well on this show as this guy who was so level-headed and just didn't blink an eye.
Yes.
I really liked his character.
He was cool. He was cool.
So I was really shocked when I read that on Saturday morning. And so rest in peace, Robert, and to his family.
What a shame.
And friends and fans, all the very best at this difficult time. So I like this a lot more than you. There's a couple of moments where I got the flashback chills of Breaking Bad.
Did you?
Yeah. I can't talk about it.
Maybe I should watch it again.
I really dug it. And Vince Gilligan's direction in a couple of moments
he's great.
Stand out.
You know what I liked? Because we heard that Breaking Bad, the writers there would say an actual practice of theirs was to write themselves into a corner and then have to write the way out. And there's a couple of moments like that in this film. We're like, what the hell is he going to do?
Yeah.
You know, it's
I know exactly that one of them you're referring
to. Like, what the fuck is going to happen here? And it worked like that. So, yeah, you know, yeah, it is good. It is. Like I said, I do recommend this one.
If you're a Breaking Bad fan and you haven't seen this already, what are you waiting for? Yeah. Get on it.
You're going to spew at the ones I put in front of this.
Yeah.
You're going to vomit and urinate. I will
get the soundboard ready. All right, my number seven is another horror film. It was released about a week and a half ago. It's a Stephen King and Joe Hill, his son, adaptation. It's called In the Tall Grass.
Oh, what's this about? I keep seeing the Netflix ad.
Yeah, it's directed by Vincenzo Natali, who's a guy who did Cube.
Yeah, oh.
Yeah, and The Splice, the sort of alien.
Yeah, I saw that one.
Yeah, that one's not bad as well. Yeah, it's okay. I wanted it to be so much better, and I thought the first 20 minutes, I'm thinking, this is going to be awesome.
What the hell is it about? The Tall Grass?
In the Tall Grass.
So in the Tall Grass.
Very, very simply, it follows a pregnant woman and her brother, and they're driving along to basically a place where they're going to give up the baby to a foster home.
Okay.
And they stop by the side of the road at a certain point next to these tall grass sort of fields, if you will. And they hear a kid calling out for help in there. And
spooky.
Because they're good people.
Yes.
They go in to investigate and very quickly get lost. And it becomes very quickly apparent this is not a normal field. There's some supernatural shenanigans going on.
That's really scary.
Including like, you take 20 steps in, turn 180 degrees and go back out, but there is no out. You're still walking through grass.
Oh, damn.
So they're sort of moving through time and space. And I won't say anything more than that.
Other characters
come into play, including Patrick Wilson, who is a main character
in this particular
film. Play very much chewing scenery and playing a sort of different kind of character.
Okay.
And then an Australian, Harrison Gilbertson, who's been in a few other bits and pieces. So I didn't recognize until basically towards the end of the film. The setup is great.
Yeah.
The execution is the culmination is disappointing.
So, that's unfortunate.
That's why it's down here at 7 for
me. Is it like a horror or a scary film?
I didn't find it personally scary at all.
Is it the genre, though?
It's a horror film.
Okay.
But there are a couple of gory moments, but not as many as you might expect.
Mm-hmm.
So, I watched it with my fiancée, and she was jumping a little bit, but it's a few jump scares in there, but overall, it's pretty tame. Bad language and some hardcore themes. So your kids can't watch it, but you know, if you're at all sort of on the fence, you like the Stephen King stuff, give it a bash. But it's no better than the medium part of his filmography.
Rough rating?
2.5 stars.
Okay.
52, 53.
Okay. Yeah, somewhere around there.
So
not a recommend?
No. I was disappointed.
Fair enough. My number six is a Netflix film called In the Shadow of the Moon.
Ah, I haven't seen this one. Okay.
Ah, good. This is set initially in 1988, there's this Philadelphia police officer, Boyd Holbrook, who wants to become a detective and begins tracking this serial killer who's mysteriously resurfaces every 9 years. And then when the killer's crimes begin to defy like the science, like just any explanation, all this weird stuff keeps happening and he can't explain any of it, right? He starts to get this obsession with finding the truth and it threatens to destroy kind of his career and his family and possibly his sanity. It's like...
Yeah, obsessive.
Yeah, it's sort of it's not a time travel movie, but it deals with a theme like that. So it's a sci-fi detective
thriller?
Film. Thriller, yeah.
Yep.
And I would say that, I won't say any more without spoiling it, I didn't pick the ending, though I imagine many would.
Okay.
I'll just tell you that.
All right.
And I thought it was very well handled, even when, like, it's just a solid, good movie. Like, it's like definitely, I couldn't poke any holes in it. They did some good work there, bit of innovation, nice little suckering here and there. Good performances. So I liked it a lot. I would absolutely recommend this one.
Okay. I'm actually keen to check it out. Score?
It's probably a 68.
Okay. So we're up. Gee, we jumped a lot very fast.
Totally,
so everything from here is approximately 3.5 stars or above.
If you like, Paul.
If I like. By the law of ranking things.
By the law of like, it's art and it doesn't necessarily, if you like it more.
By the law of Wayne's penis. I don't even know what that means, but neither does Wayne at this point.
I really don't. Please, go on.
Well, my number six you will not have seen. And this is right on the border of recommend for me. Like, if you're a horror film fan or a horror comedy film fan, that's timely because next week, wait till the end of the episode. This is a almost zero budget New Zealand horror comedy. I'd say comedy horror, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Killer Sofa.
Directed
by Bernardo Rayo. I have to say, if you've not seen this film and you're at all interested, watch the trailer. It's legitimately funny. In fact, I'm going to make Wayne watch it right now.
Killer Sofa.
Yep.
All right.
I have a delivery for Francesca Morton.
Hey, there's blood here. That recliner almost chopped my mate's finger off.
He keeps saying the recliner's possessed. I really don't know what's gotten into him.
We need to find out where that recliner is. Tomorrow morning, we'll call every delivery company in the city if we have to.
What the hell was that? Okay, everyone, if you're interested at all, pause for a sec. Google Killer Sofa Trailer. Just this is what we're talking about here. What the hell?
So this film follows it stars no one you'll know, except there's one dude in it who was in Braindead / Dead Alive.
Oh, okay.
He played one of the greaser kind of bad dudes who gets killed in the cemetery.
I would never recognize him.
Other than him, there's no one he recognizes. And it follows this fetching young woman named Francesca who has always had a problem with weirdos. Like, guys, this is so obsessively attracted to her. And she's had to take violence restraining orders out, all this kind of stuff. Anyway, she somehow comes into possession of this, they call it killer sofa. Can we be clear here? It's a recliner. It's one of the things where you pull the lever and the legs go up.
Yeah.
It should have been called Killer Recliner. I'm not quite sure what the director was thinking, but maybe it's a New Zealand thing. Maybe our good mates Sam and Stacey can tell us that
whether recliners are called
sofas in New Zealand, because over here in Australia, I was just going, why are they calling this a sofa? It's not a sofa.
Although, to be fair, sofa is so funnier than recliner.
Maybe that's all the reason I went with it. Anyway, it's possessed, right? This thing, I won't go into specifics because it does go batshit insane in this film.
It's nuts!
And it looks, they play it, here's the genius of the film, they play it dead straight. Everyone is reacting completely normally, as if, not that they accept there's a sofa walking around, but no one's looking at the camera and nodding.
Yeah.
There's like, no gags about, well, I guess it's a far, it's not going, like, there's nothing like that, you know what I mean?
No self-awareness.
No self-awareness. They're playing it complete like this is a real horror murder mystery.
That probably is the way to do this.
Because otherwise, so funny. And when the sofa starts moving around, and they've basically got these buttons for eyes in the middle of this.
So it's totally chair. That. It's totally what it looks like
it's
in the trailer.
It's so funny. There's a moment when she's walking away because the sofa is obsessed with her as well.
Oh, God.
When she's walking away and the sofa comes to the window and it's like watching it like his creepy stalker. It's just, I was laughing so much in the film. Why is it down here then at number 6? Because it tries to do too much. The director has clearly just run with it and he's putting all these ridiculously over the top, beyond more than just that, like themes and the like, to the point where there's a guy who happens to have a YouTube channel who's explaining every single thing about the spiritual stuff that's going on because that's the plot beat to get you through it.
Yeah.
That's really daft.
Okay.
To the point where, and I won't spoil the ending, but it's so ridiculous, the ending, that it kind of drives the score down by half a star. So
in the trailer where I saw the shadow of a giant spring outside of a window, as though that was the sofa's arm or hands, I'm like,
tap on the window.
What the fuck am I watching?
So funny.
Okay.
So look, I realized that almost no one's going to see this movie.
Okay, this is like my Batman pick. No one's like, what the
and
fuck?
And if I'm brutally honest, I substitute this one in for Rocket Man because you've already talked about
it. Nice work. Yeah. No, I'm glad you did because that was good. That was just good. That was a good moment.
There we are. Number 6 for me, Killer Sofa.
Righto. Well, my number 5 is a movie called Yesterday.
Ah, yeah. It's on my to-watch list. Haven't got there yet.
So his name is Jack Malik, but his actual name is Himesh Patel, and I'm not sure if he's related to Dev Patel or not. And I didn't look it up. So really, I don't know why I'm saying
that. Are you trying to say there's only that many Patels in the world?
See, I knew it was going to go bad on me for some reason, okay? But like, you know, they're both actors. I don't know. Anyway. Shut up, bitch. He's a struggling singer-songwriter in a tiny English seaside town, and he dreams about fame, but they're rapidly failing this dream.
Directed by Danny Boyle?
Yeah, yep. Directed by Danny Boyle, and he has like all of. He's got this best friend manager. His name's Ellie, and she's in love with him, but he doesn't know. And basically, this freak bus accident happens where he gets knocked off his bike by a bus, and when he's unconscious for like 2 seconds or 5 seconds, wakes up, and then he slowly finds out he's in a world where the Beatles don't exist. So he, as a musician, just remembers all their songs and basically starts to record them and becomes famous. And it's actually a love story, all right? But it's couched in this Beatle thing, and he's really good. Like, he's good at playing Beatle stuff. I found it really kind of awesome. You will not like this movie.
Okay.
You won't like this movie. Well, no, you might, because the Beatles songs, it's a wonderful celebration of the Beatles music.
Right.
Because you remember, oh, that was a good song. That was a good song.
Who doesn't like the Beatles?
Exactly. So, you know, I mean, you might like just find, because I totally Spotified the soundtrack.
Playlist, yeah.
And I'm listening to him singing the cover of the Beatles songs, not the Beatles songs, so whatever. But I had a lot of fun with this, and it was like, the premise is great. It's just kind of cool. So I recommend this one if you like music, even any kind of music at all.
Okay. So it's 5 for you. So therefore, what would you give it as a score?
Fuck you, Paul. I don't know. What's the next one? Actually, fuck you. This is about a 65%? 65?
So is that lower than the one you just ranked below?
Possibly.
Jeez.
No, it's not. I liked this one better. I like this one. I can't remember.
It's
how much I like it is how high it goes.
Yeah,
it might be a better
that rank.
No,
that
a better movie
way.
Can be like less than a fucking
You're
movie that's shit, but you like more. Absolutely. Makes pleaser to me, fucking robot. All right. What's your number, fucking?
My number 5 will put paid to that robot comment, because it's so out of the norm for me, and it includes an actor who I fucking hate.
Who?
He stars in this film. It's a Netflix film. It's called Between Two Ferns. Colon, the movie.
Zach Galifianakis. What's it like? I saw a trailer for it and pissed my pants.
Well, here's the thing. I've never watched Between Two Ferns.
It's just an interview. It's like
which is a deliberately awkward interview of celebrities, right?
Yeah.
Played by this guy.
And it's really weird. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Who's just doing that. Those scenes in this film are awesome. So he's basically tasked, after he destroys his studio, Will Ferrell is his evil sort of overlord boss, who all he cares about is clicks and making money, sends him off on around the country to interview 10 other celebrities by Friday, or he's gone. And if he does interview 10 celebrities by Friday, he'll be given his own late night talk show.
Yeah, okay.
To do this.
Yeah.
So off he goes with his entourage of cameraman
and production assistant
and whatever, and it's stringing together these interviews by the barest of plot threads, with these other characters bouncing off him. Those bits are just average at best. And not even average. They're poor.
Are they long?
Well, the whole film's only about 82, 83 minutes, which
that's
really works
at least
in its favor.
Yeah.
But the thread getting him to the interviews is really weak. And if that was the film, you would shit all over it. But the interviews themselves are funny.
Are the real film.
Right?
Yeah.
They are the real film. And then I was going to give this one 2.5 stars.
Yeah.
Then the end credit, and this is maybe an indictment on the film, if I'm really honest.
Yeah.
The end credits features the outtakes from when he's doing those interviews.
Yeah.
They are genuinely hilarious.
Really?
Genuine, like the hardest I've laughed at anything this year.
Oh, okay.
It's so
I'll watch
good.
That. I'll watch that. I'll watch
it
that.
It is so funny. Like, I didn't want the credits to end.
Oh, good stuff.
So I just bumped my rating up. And upon reflection, it's a really bad way to review a film, to say the end credits are the fucking best. But
well, it's an element of the film. I'm
but
fine
that's
with
Zach
it.
Galifianakis. I hate him. I hate him as a. I hate the one note he plays. Here, at least he's showing a little bit of nuance.
Yeah, no,
with
I hate
his character.
I hate him in the Hangover movies because he's just a piece of shit. But yeah, okay, I'm kind of interested in this
and
now,
especially to see him reacting like, "Oh God, can't we? I just ask that question."
Yeah,
in the outtakes, it's kind of humanizes him a little bit for me.
Okay,
so I'm a little bit warmer towards him than I was, which wouldn't be hard.
I'm on board with this. Yes, okay, I will watch this.
Yeah,
now.
You should totally watch this film. Okay. I don't know whether you'll love it, but it's definitely in your wheelhouse to at least try.
Okay, I'm down. It's on. And my number 4. I don't know how you feel about this. The movie is called Stuber.
I haven't seen it.
Okay, so
it's literally that and yesterday both on my watch list to come, but after October.
I wonder how you feel about this one. This has got Dave
this
Bautista.
Is very high.
Yeah, because I liked it. Dave Bautista and Kumail Nanjiani, right? Now that it's this high, Paul's going to automatically hate it. I'll tell you that right now. He will automatically hate it, right? So it's a comedy about an Uber driver named Stu, hence Stuber, who is struggling in life.
Genius. That comedy writes itself.
That's not the note of the film, okay? That's just what some guy calls him, so they call it the movie that. Fuck you, Paul! All right? Yeah, dick beat. So he's a Uber driver, and he's got this new business partner in this separate business who's this woman who's a longtime friend of his, but he's in love with her. And anyway, he picks up Dave Bautista, Dave Bautista looks like he's 8 feet tall and 10x handles across and can kill anyone. And he just gets in the car, and Kumail Nanjiani gets caught up in it, and hilarity ensues. Now,
really? Hilarity?
Okay, look, I'm not saying it's guffaw, laugh, 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 right? What happens is the whole play of the comedy here is just Stu, or making like Kumail Nanjiani, making gags. All right, so it's just he's an abnormally funny person. He's not a comedian or anything. He's just an Uber driver. Okay, so that part of it is like, okay, the jokes are mostly working. They are not like rolling in the aisles laughing. Okay. But it's better than... yeah, it's that. It's exactly that. Which is fine, okay? Also, Aiko Uwais is in it. Your boy. Mm-hmm. So he's the actual bad guy that Dave Bautista has been tracking all these years.
So they have a fight at some point.
Dude, they fight in the beginning. They fight... It's really good. It's really good. So you will like that part. Huh?
Aiko Uwais.
Yes, that's right. I'm telling you, that's your boy, man. But here's the thing, right? Though this is why you have a shot at liking it. Feel free to put your Bellstar stuff out there. Paul was singing Aiko, everyone. And by the way, I think that every time you mention his name. I think it every single time.
Really? Yeah. I never have until now.
Are you kidding? It's Aiko, man. Now we know what song we're leaving on.
Yeah, we do.
Because that actually is great.
Thank
song.
You. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. But here's the thing, Paulie. This show, ostensibly a comedy, the violence in it is harsh. It's like bloody. And
that might help it.
Yeah, no, it's like, oh, shit, like that. So it's actually pretty good shit. I actually like this movie.
Okay.
And, yeah. You will now hate it. I actually, when you see it, just give us like a little review on the show, okay? Because you'll definitely hate it.
Okay.
So there you go.
Or when it makes my top 10 of the year. I mean, my worst 10 of the year.
See, that's what you'll probably do. You'll probably save it for a show.
All right. Wow, that is high.
Yeah, liked it.
So 3.5 stars or above.
Fucking okay, cunt. All right. Okay. If you like, cracker.
What's the score written there?
I don't bitch know. I don't fucking put a score on these. Let's see. Stuber.
He's going to do off the top of his head, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. It's definitely high six. It might be about a 64.
It's a one more than yesterday. Oh, no. Didn't you say it was 64, 65?
Yeah, yeah. See, Paul, it doesn't have to go linear, man. It doesn't. Life is not a flow chart, you slut. So
what are you, a fucking moron? Whatever.
It makes complete sense.
To one person, i.e. you.
Yep, people out there, I think they get it. Anyway, go on.
My number four, then, is not the last horror movie on my list. It's
damn
one
it.
That I saw at the cinemas the other night. It's not brilliant, but it did the job well enough. This is probably Between Two Ferns I recommend to comedy fans, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark I recommend to horror film fans, or young adult sort of film fans. So, young adults.
What is this one about?
Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark is based on a popular series of books that are aimed at sort of...
YA.
YA, or, you know, sort of 12, 13, 14-year-old type stuff.
Okay.
It basically goes back to 1968, something like that. No, somewhere around that sort of time frame.
Sure.
And it follows a book which gets found in this supposedly haunted house by a bunch of the characters in it. And then the book starts to write stories itself which come true to the characters and they get killed off in weird and wonderful ways.
Oh, really? That's a bit harsh for the old YA. Oh, not really. They do all like fucking like...
Well, Hunger Games
and shit. Yeah, yeah, you're right.
So some of it's creepy in places. It's not overly scary. Like, your young kids can't watch this. Your 12, 13-year-olds, if they've got any stomach at all for horror, will be fine with it. It's very bloodless, but...
PG-13?
There's some genuinely cool sort of makeup effects and ghosty effects. And it's directed by the guy who did The Troll Hunter, Andre Ovrudul. What's the best I can do? Guillermo del Toro was sort of involved in the production of this as well. So it's that kind of level of detail which goes into it. Looks nice. The film's well put together. The characters, they're mostly okay. So I cared enough about them. It ends on a really sort of weird kind of, hey, we're open for more note, which is a bit unwelcomed because it would have been much better contained on
exactly,
its own.
Exactly. They got to make money.
Yeah. And they didn't need it. It's just a line of dialogue which just wasn't needed. You still could come back to this world, no problem at all. But overall, I dug it. I had a good time there. It went fast. It's 111 minutes long, this film, and I didn't look at my watch once.
That's good. There's a few YA movies that are not bad. Have you seen Ender's Game? It's got Harrison Ford in it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is not bad.
It's fine. I like this one better than that one. But this is more my genre. So, you know, it wasn't a very busy cinema, but I had a good enough time with it, and I'm glad I saw it at the cinema rather than waiting for it to come to sort of...
That's big then.
Digital download.
Yeah, if you like that more, that's good.
Yeah. Well, well recommended to horror film fans, but otherwise, you don't need to bother.
All right. I shan't.
No, you don't need to bother.
Yeah. All right. Well, my number three is a movie, actually, that's in the cinemas now, and I saw it yesterday. Hustlers.
Oh.
Mm.
Wow, that's highly recommended.
Well,
the trailer did catch my attention. I saw it before Joker.
Yeah, yeah. It's not... I'm not saying this is perfect, but let me tell you, this movie is inspired by a viral New York magazine article. Hustlers follows this crew of savvy former strip club employees, including J-Lo and Constance Wu, who are the two leads.
Unrecognizable.
She's Yeah, I was looking at her going, I think I know her, but no, I don't. She doesn't look
in the trailer. I'm like, the whole way, I'm like, is that what? What? When the names came up at the end, I'm like, that she looks so different than Crazy Rich Asian.
Yeah, she looks like 12 years, no, just really young and like Crazy Rich. I don't know. Anyway, so this is the thing. They're strippers, and due to financial hardship, they kind of band together and they scam Wall Street bros who come into the club. And what they do is they actually have organized this ring of strippers who find Wall Street guys exclusively because they feel that Wall Street already robbed everyone and didn't go to jail. So they descend on these unsuspecting Wall Street types and they bring them to a club for a dance, and then they clean out his credit card. They just, boom, they get his numbers because they drug him.
Because they're basically saying, like, who's he going to tell?
That's right. And it's like, you know, what do you do?
You're a bunch of strippers.
Exactly. So they do that. And sometimes they can make, you know, some guys got like an American Express card with like no limit and shit. They'll just take $50,000 or whatever, you know, shit like that. So this, I imagine, would be a great girls' night out movie.
Hence why you appreciate it.
Exactly. But I'll tell you this. J-Lo is amazing. She looks outstanding for a lady of what I guess is at least 50 years plus.
Mm-hmm.
The whole movie in general is decent. I would say decent to good. Not amazing, but definitely worth a look. The first third of the movie is intoxicatingly compelling. It's filmed in a heady strippers in a club slow-mo skin binge kind of way. But it should be said there's no more than, say, two naked pairs of breasts in this movie. So it's actually handled quite well.
It's still number three on your list.
Well, it still gets the titty bonus, but like it's...
but not the titty jackpot.
Well, we haven't defined that field yet.
Not on mic.
Yes, exactly. That's a post and a half. Look, the only thing about it is in the middle of the film, there's this, they overplay the lovey-doveyness of how much these girls mean to each other, and there's just one scene too many like that.
Okay.
That's a bit of a problem, but the ending is good. The film is entertaining throughout. I say it is a good film.
Okay.
So, and there's actually funny bits in it. Boom. Mm. So,
I said to my significant other that if she wanted to see it, I'd see that one with her. It was interesting enough from the trailer. So,
Right, and it's also visually quite nice. Like, you know, okay. I guess it's strippers and stuff, but like it's still shot really well.
Okay. Great. So that's your number three.
Number three.
Get ready then, because my number three is El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie.
Oh, damn.
That's where this is for me. As a Breaking Bad fan, this hit all the notes I needed it to hit.
I think I was missing. Yeah, okay. All right. Fair enough.
Look, there's an argument to say it's unnecessary on one level, but unlike.
No, if three, it entertains
unlike
you,
unlike Three
good.
From Hell, it doesn't end in a less definitive place than the end of the last.
Exactly. You already won that thing, and that's all you get.
It advances the story. It adds elements to it. It lets us revisit certain characters that are still alive. It's a good film.
I wonder why he did this. He's like, you know what? Let's do one other thing. I've got this. Maybe he wrote this whole thing for Jesse and said, I never actually made it into a movie. It's cool that they did it.
Yeah, I think so. And by the way, Aaron Paul, we didn't mention, is very, very good in this movie.
He is.
He really does have to convey a lot of emotion, and I think he does it very effectively. And I'm going to spoil this one little bit.
Yeah.
Does not say bitch once.
yeah.
Which I think is a very deliberate choice.
Yeah, he's
not the guy he once was.
That's right. Good point. Yep. Even in the flashback.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, my number two, I wonder if you've seen this one, Paulie. It's called The Red Sea Diving Resort.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. This is a great fucking movie. Great
you are
fucking
a
movie.
Sad, strange
I had an
little man.
Excellent you have time my pick. In this shit.
Wow.
Everyone, it's a Netflix
this
film.
Five
I
places
loved it.
Up higher than El Camino.
Mm.
You are clearly off your head.
What the fuck? This is a great show.
Nope.
All right, people.
It's barely passable.
It's a Netflix show, everyone. Red Sea Diving Resort. It's got Captain America in it. All right. And it's inspired by this, like, true life rescue missions where in the Red Sea Diving Resort is this, like, these international agents and, like, some Ethiopian refugee sort of savers, I guess, in the early 80s used this deserted holiday retreat in the Sudan as a front to smuggle, like, thousands of refugees to Israel. And the undercover team carrying this out is, like, Chris Evans and, like, Omar from The Wire and, like...
Well, no, don't you mean he's part of the refugees?
Yeah, but they were all working as a team to save the refugees.
Yes,
in
okay,
head.
Sure.
So, yeah.
And then it has Alessandro Nivola from Face Off.
Yeah!
Yeah.
That's where he was from! Yeah. I was trying to place his face. Yeah, yeah, he's cool.
Nicolas Cage's brother in that film.
Yep. Well, it's so funny because he's coming up in another one of mine.
Oh, damn, okay.
Yeah, I know. And also Hayley Bennett, who was on a Girl on the Train. She was the blonde pretty girl.
Yeah, okay.
She's in this too. And yeah, you didn't like it.
No, I thought it was really boring.
Why?
Really boring.
I was actually riveted.
I had a bigger problem with it. Why are we spending so much time with the white saviors when we should be spending more time with Omar's story and the refugees themselves.
Why do you say that though? Because the whole point about the fact that these guys were there was a CIA component, but there was already like these. Who are they even?
I wanted to see the real plight, and I got it in small snatches. And what instead I got was, hey, we're running a diving resort for too long.
Yeah, but that's
that's the front. I get it.
The movie's about them though.
This movie shouldn't have been about them. That's the point.
All right, fine. Well,
for me, I'm like,
okay.
I'm bored, and I feel like this is targeting the wrong area, and so I'm a little bit dark.
It's definitely a movie about so high the heroes being that these are the, you know, but I don't. Really
I think
care
you
about
were
that.
Called. I think you were wowed by the Captain Americanness of this.
I was, because you almost see.
You weren't supposed to agree.
No, I was, because he obviously came just off the set of Avengers, because he's still fucking beefcake.
They literally introduce him by doing fucking push-ups in the back of a pickup truck.
Yeah. Like, and why wouldn't you? God. No, because they're explaining why he's so beefcake. That's obviously what it is, right? And he's like, oh, by the way, you know, you almost get to see America's dick in this film. Just like a little bit.
Wayne was...
A little bit excited.
A little bit
disappointed. A little bit excited. Right?
Phil was 5 stars till that moment. It was his number one.
Now, I'm interested if anyone likes this show. Tell me, and if they hate it, tell Lee as well. Because I thought this was universally good. I looked at it and I enjoyed that movie. So there you are.
Wow.
Paul does not agree.
I am shocked. Yeah, this would if I was rating it in my this would be 9 at best. This would be slightly better than The Kitchen on my list.
Oh. Well, I haven't seen The Kitchen, but fuck that.
Not as good as Detective Pikachu.
Oh, fuck off. This is way better than what I assumed Detective Pikachu was like.
All right, well, my number two. Now, I did tease at the top of this countdown that there are a couple of films here that may rescue 2019 for me, and well, here is the first of them.
Hmm.
It's a foreign film.
Oh.
It's from South Korea.
Highbrow.
It's from director Bong Joon-ho.
Oh,
it
sure.
It is Parasite. Have you heard of this one, Wayne?
Nope, I've heard of Bong Joon-ho.
You should. He's directed Okja, Snowpiercer, The Host, and Memories of Murder, which that one you probably wouldn't have seen, I would guess.
I have a friend who has a bong named Bong Joon-ho. Sorry. I just thought of that now.
Moving right
please
along.
Please go on.
This is a film all about class and poverty versus richness, and it's a comedy, basically, which then leans very heavily into some genre trappings later in the movie. And
okay.
It's very unpredictable, so I'm not going to spoil it, except to say it basically follows this poor family. The son gets a gig through his best mate to do tutoring of a rich family's daughter in terms of English.
Oh, yeah.
So he starts teaching her English, sees an in for another family member to take on another role within the family, and then how they all become ingratiated with this family, this rich family, basically leeching off them like parasites.
Oh!
Okay? And then from there, the film goes places that you could not possibly predict based on the first 45 minutes of the movie.
So it's a comedy drama.
Comedy drama for the vast majority of the film. Switches gears very late.
Let me ask you this. So you're watching a foreign film, mm-hmm. and it's a comedy. Are you laughing?
Chuckling. Not like falling down.
No, that's good.
There's some chuckling like...
If you're reading a subtitle and you're like, oh, you know, that's some sharp writing. So
it's impeccable. It's always hard to tell how good acting is in a foreign language.
Exactly.
But to me, it seemed impeccably acted. I believed every single role, from the difference between mm-hmm. the rich mother of the family to the poor mother, how well they cast and how differently they played their particular roles are excellent. The father is spot on.
Yeah.
And even in terms of the development his character goes through the course of the film, when things happen the way they do, I wasn't left in disbelief. I could kind of see. Oh, not that I would agree.
This is unexpected from you.
Well, come on. I'm the foreign film guy here.
Oh, definitely. But like, this is number two?
This is my number two. And unless something remarkable happens in the next 2.5 months, this will be in my top 10 films of the year.
Bloody hell. Say it again.
Parasite. Yeah. It won Venice Film Festival, I think it was, Best Film Award, Golden Lion or something like that. So it's touted as a potential, not just, I think it has been submitted by South Korea as the candidate for Best Foreign Film or International Film, I think they're now calling it, the Academy Awards. But there's a chance it might get nominated for Best Film, flat out.
Mm.
So it is that good.
Okay, all right.
And it just has appeal, I think, across the board to critics and sort of regular folk.
I'll check that out. You said it was a comedy and drama. It's good.
Like I said,
not that it's funny, but if it was presented
more situational.
Yes, I'm fine with that.
Wow, look at this and that.
I'm fine with that. It's just pleasant to be around.
It's poignant. It's emotional in places, and it is surprising.
Okay, big one. All right. Do we go? Do we have bother point going back or?
No, I don't think so. Not for this. No, we don't need to recap our list here. No. We it's not comparable from this point, except to say this is the best film that we have seen in the last 11 weeks that we haven't spoken about on the show. And in my case, it absolutely is the best film I've seen in the last 11 weeks. Full stop.
Okay. Shit on me. All right. Well, my number one is a movie called, it's an art house film, and it's called The Art of Self-Defense.
Ah, it's again, on my list to watch after October 31st.
Well, okay, listen.
I'm really interested in this movie.
You should be, because this film presents itself as a quirky comedy, which is similar in tone but not content to, say, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. It's that sort of light. It's that kind of,
okay,
you know, not it's not as quirky and like that. It's not. And it is, however, good. It is sort of slowly, not only slowly paced, but typically low slung like an indie, you know? But then it starts to get very dark and then casually surreal. Like the karate, what happens is it starts with Jesse Eisenberg. It's got Jesse Eisenberg and Alessandro Nivola.
Oh, okay. So
Jesse Eisenberg is this like bookish sort of like accountant dude, and he's kind of a bit of a wiener, and he gets mugged by like five dudes on motorcycles and they beat the piss out of him, right? And then so he's very like, you know, he gets really scared and he starts like thinking about buying a gun. Then he joins this karate school, which is where Alessandro Nivola is the sensei.
Yep.
Right?
Okay. I can see why this is appealing to you.
You would think so, but there's very little martial arts in this movie because it's just weird. Like, if you look at the trailer, it's him like saying things like, karate is a language. Ask me a question. What do you plan on doing for the weekend? And he goes, I'm going to, and he kicks out, do some grocery shopping, punches. Then I'm going to rent a movie. It's really shit like that. It's like, what the fuck is this? So it's really weird. But as you progress in this thing, you see that how weirdly enigmatic and mysterious the guy is. And he speaks in this gravelly Steven Seagalian tone. Like, you know, and he, as it progresses, you see the students, what the students see in this karate school, how much the school is important to them, and the lengths at which they go to satisfy the sensei, and you kind of see how insane he is. So now what happens is you've got this movie that you were laughing at, and it's like, something's going on here. And then it has these weirdly surreal moments. Like, Jesse Eisenberg gets pissed off and kicks the tire of his pickup truck, and it blows up. And I'm like, that can't happen, right? And then he just walks out of the frame, and then nothing. And then it's just the next frame. They don't never refer to it again. It's
okay.
It's one of those weird things. And really big revelations. You might have a problem with
that
this.
That might lose me.
No. If there's a really big revelation in the movie, it is just played like an oral scene. There's no build up to it. It's just, this happened. What the fuck? It's that. So it's weird. I'm telling you it's weird. You may not like it for that reason.
Okay.
But it really rang for me for some reason. Okay, I really liked it. You're going, what the fuck? But it kind of works. It's just, there you are.
Score, Wayne.
Ah. Just to piss you off, 20. No. look, it's a solid sort of 73. So no, 76. 76.
Okay. All right.
There you are.
So nothing really blew you away, but there's some good stuff.
No, but overall, stuff. Most of them I would go.
Good,
yeah,
solid stuff.
I've got people I could recommend it to. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing that one. So thank you for that's an added incentive. Let's put it that way.
There you are.
My number one, I have teased on social media a little bit. Like, people ask me about what you think, and I've just played it very, very mum because I wanted to talk about it here and let it be the first sort of acknowledgement of it. My number one is from the guy who directed Hereditary. It's his second film, Ari Aster's second film. It's Midsommar.
This is the best one.
Midsommar.
Yeah, you never mentioned whether you loved it or not.
Is 148 minutes long in its original cut. The director's cut is apparently like 173 minutes.
Bloody hell.
I watched the original cut, 148 minutes. And it's a film which effectively follows a couple who travel with a few of their mates to this festival in Sweden. One of the characters, that's his hometown. So they go out of Stockholm into the countryside of Sweden and get involved in the festivities of this Midsommar festival. And of course, things go completely and utterly pear-shaped. It is probably the first horror film which takes place almost entirely in sunlight.
Okay, that's cool.
In and of itself is interesting enough.
Yeah.
But Ari Aster, I hesitate to say in a little bit because he's only made two films. He's just a genius in terms of his the way he shoots scenes. Like Hereditary.
Is he a Swedish director?
No. He's American. Okay. As far as I'm aware, he's American. And this is in some ways the polar opposite to Hereditary, which is almost all in the dark and at night and unsettling for those reasons.
Guy.
Yeah, same. That's what I said.
Sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Pay attention, Wayne.
I'm paying attention. I was just looking.
This is outdoors and wide shots and long shots. He doesn't do this cut, cut, cut. It's all kind of there for you. And he hangs on a shot for longer than most directors would or editors would allow to really allow the emotions to sink home.
Okay.
The opening of this film is incredibly dark and just hits you right in the gut. And then from there, the sense of dread that this film imparts.
How can you like these fucking movies, man? Listen to this shit. I don't even want to kill myself.
You know disaster is coming. It's just how is it going to befall these characters? And it's so well played. It's just every part of you screaming at them to get out of there. But you also understand up until a point why they haven't. Because, you know, don't be so ridiculous because we know you're in a horror film. But if you're in that, up until a point, you wouldn't know you're in it, if that makes any sense. Yeah. It's really well played. Like, just perfectly put
that
together.
Seems well crafted.
It is a little overwrought, a little overlong. Like, I reckon if they had a knocked out 20 minutes of this film, it would be as good as Hereditary, if not even slightly better.
20 minutes.
But there was just a bits and pieces here and there. I'm like, okay, yeah. We made our point now.
Extra scenes, yeah.
Come on.
That'll kill you for you.
But overall, the atmosphere that this film creates is second to none. It's absolutely the best horror film of 2019.
Mm.
I want to say nothing will come close to it, but I am aware that on the radar we have come out for us still in Australia, Ready or Not, which I'm hopeful might be really good as well. But so I'll hold my judgment. But for
horror
now,
film? Yeah.
This film is special. There's some wonderful visual effects.
Yeah.
Spot up through the film. Like they do a lot of drugs in this movie. So maybe, Wayne, maybe.
What the fuck do you think I am, motherfucker?
And the way that plays out or depicted on screen is brilliant. And so little poppy, like little flowers just opening in the corner of the shot and then closing again and shit like that. Yeah, it's beautiful. Like trees that are moving in just one couple of different spots on the screen and then they're moving back to their original position.
And you notice it.
Yeah, like it's like initially it's like, whoa, what's going on here? It's that kind of thing.
Okay.
Very clever.
Sure.
And really what this film is, it's the horror of relationships. This is really at the bottom line. Underneath it all, it's more about how bad relationships can get and why you should get the fuck out rather than belabor things to the end.
Really?
It's really clever.
That's okay. Mm. Look, I'm not going to watch it. I'll read a synopsis.
I would love for you to watch it and see what you think.
It sounds like I wouldn't make it through.
You might have to split it up over a couple of watchings. That's okay. Like, I don't see anything wrong with that. Like, you're not going to the cinema to see it and so you don't get that same. But if you're watching at home, because I just wondered, because you did love Hereditary a lot. Mm. From memory, it made your top 10 films of that year as well.
Yeah.
And so, just because it's a horror film, you shouldn't just avoid it. Like, you should give it a go, because this guy's a talented filmmaker.
I know you're right, but it's so, yeah, okay. Well, we'll see how we, okay. Look, I won't rule it out, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm not going to hold you to it, but I would recommend to anyone who's a cinema fan. You have to be able to put up with some stomach-churning violence in a couple of places. You have to prepare yourself for that. But otherwise, see this film.
Okay. All right.
I know a lot of our friends have really gotten behind this movie as well. So there you are. Everyone who's asked, this film is great. And
you're number one, in fact.
It will be in my top five films of 2019, no question.
Score, just out of interest?
Yeah, 82, 83.
Yep.
I think I gave Hereditary 83, 84.
That's huge for you, yeah. Wow. Biggin.
There it is. That's Biggin. Our top 10, last 10. Some great films, some really terrible
films. Some shit ones.
And
some
then
ones.
A perplexing decision from Wayne.
To you, I don't even know.
To have the Red Sea Diving Club up in
great
the
fucking
great
film. Great list, fucking film.
But it wouldn't be an episode of the Countdown.
Totally more engaging.
It did El Camino down El Camino. So much lower
than absolutely. Oh, I don't understand the confusion.
That is it from us. We have no honorable mentions on this particular show, but we do wrap up with every episode with your feedback on the topic at hand in a segment that is called the Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Talk about.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with Gerald Morris from the 2Ps on a podcast, his review of Joker. First act equals C+. Becomes redundant and frankly boring after about 30 to 40 minutes.
Really?
Last act equals A+. Visceral, brutal, and beautiful. Leaves you wanting more. 3.5 stars.
That movie again?
Joker.
Okay. We'll talk. Keep going.
We have talked. Our review's already out there for everyone.
Yeah, I've heard new theories about that movie, which has made me sort of think about it differently. I still wasn't impressed enough, but like it's interesting that people are talking so much about it.
Brantley Oliver, good friend of the Epic Film Guys and good supporter of our show, said Hustlers, great chemistry between Constance Wu and Jennifer Lopez keeps the story interesting. However, ending was slow and disappointing.
You think? What did you think was gonna? Okay, sorry. All right, cool.
from Nick, our good friend, Epic Film Guys himself, or one of the Epic Film Guys himself, Ad Astra, is currently at the top of my best of the year list.
Nick would like that show.
I was a kid again reading articles about the future of space exploration and giddy watching it. I adore the depth of character Pitt gives, an amazing performance. Moon Pirates was a bit odd, but I loved it anyway.
You know what? I've been meaning to tell you this. The bits in the movie that were like the Moon Pirates and all the baboons and shit, that wasn't out of place. It helped the movie.
Disagree
it helped the movie.
Entirely.
It didn't jar me at all. I was like, oh, surprised. But anyway, go on.
Disagree entirely, but I cannot believe that's Nick's favorite film of the year.
No, that's actually, yeah, that's the price.
Well, Dan from Netflix and Swill is shitting on a film called Subterreno from 2003. So boring. The performance suck. The camera work is worse. Easily one of the worst things I've seen all year. Here's a film I thought would make your list, Wayne, from Duty from the Shaken Not Nerd podcast, Good Boys. Hilarious comedy like Superbad, but much better.
I've been trying to go out and to catch that before it comes out.
You literally said during the week, I'm going to see Good Boys tonight. You didn't go?
No, that night I went and saw something else, or I can't remember what happened.
You didn't go see Joker again?
No, I definitely didn't do that. But like, no, I think I just missed out there. But then I saw Hustlers. You know, it's the whole thing.
Okay. All right. Well, TJ Reviews. Thank you, TJ, for this. Last Black Man in San Francisco is one of the best looking films this year with a top 3 musical score. Maybe a little slow for you boys, but I think you can appreciate the craft. Or he knows us well.
Yeah, he does.
Matt W6767, Stripes. Forgot how much fun this movie was till I saw it uncut for the first time in 15 years.
Bill Murray?
Everyone needs to watch it uncut again. Yeah, the Bill Murray film.
There's so many titties in that movie. Like, I remember as a kid I saw the uncut one. I'm like,
Titty Jackpot?
For the 80s, absolutely, absolutely.
That was a reference to a joke I made earlier.
I got it. Okay, good. I got it, motherfucker.
Laugh, motherfucker. What's this craft? What's this bullshit? But you make a joke, I laugh, motherfucker. You don't laugh at all.
No, I thought by answering it, I would be addressing it. Never mind.
Kevin Lawler said, Midsommar. His wife and I watched this week, Trish, and we were mesmerized. My favorite film of the year. Starting Whoa. To feel Ari Aster, maybe a new Kubrick. I can't wait to see it again.
Wow.
Mm. Okay. Billy Dunham, our good friend from the We Watched a Thing podcast, said Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark was surprisingly fun and surprisingly scary. Quite enjoyable for the spooky season. Also, Parasite is the best film of the year. Boom!
Holy shit, this guy, you're on the well team.
And a great statement on the class divide. Thanks for that, Billy. Paul Murphy said A Quiet Place, eerily disturbing and amazing how much sign language you can figure out without prior knowledge. Very enjoyable.
Great film, great film.
Chris Sutherland said Triple Frontier, starts off great, really well done. Then shits the bed, jumps out the window, and left its wallet.
It really did.
Mm-hmm. That's a good description.
Yeah.
Hendo from the IMDb Journey podcast said, Dear Zachary, holy shit.
Still too scared to watch
5 that. Stars. Pull your fucking finger out, Wayne.
I've still got it.
Stop being a bitch. Blake Jarvis said, Joker, the best film of the year.
Yeah, look, many people agree with you.
Mm. The SDSD car said, Alien vs. Predator. Good first effort at merging two iconic sci-fi franchises while giving both fractions an equal showing. Also rather faithful to the theme of the Dark Horse comic source material.
Mm.
Fucking hate that movie with a fiery passion. That's just me though.
Really?
Yeah. And look, most people do. Most people hate it.
Is that so?
Yeah. Okay. But everyone hates Requiem even more, so.
Yeah, true.
The Contrarians, Julio, our good friend, said, watch the original Child's Play because it's October and all that. What do you know? It's actually kind of good. Thoroughly entertaining, decent acting. What the hell?
Mm.
There you are.
Okay. Nice.
Last few here. Dan is not the problem on Twitter said, I just saw Sausage Party based on Wayne's recommendation. And except for the awesome Saving Private Ryan death, it's very forgettable.
Really?
I guess that's why Wayne forgot to add it to his top 10 animated films two years ago.
Yeah,
I'm pretty new and decided to start from the beginning, said Dan.
We get better, Dan. All right.
Arguable.
Yeah, true.
Anything to say about how you left it off your top 10 animated films?
Because I'm an idiot. That's why. I forgot.
Right along. Len Sutherland said, I think it was called Space Chimps, but they weren't in it much. It was mostly about Brad Pitt and stock photos of Tommy Lee Jones from Space Cowboys. Would not recommend.
Space Chimps?
So he's talking about Ad Astra,
yeah. All right.
Adam Cracknell said The Mummy from 2017. So disgustingly shit, you would rather be mummified than watch it again.
Fair enough. That is a piece of shit.
And that is the last of our listener feedback reviews for this week. Thanks to everybody who gets back to the show. Sorry we can't get through all of your feedback. We really, truly do appreciate it.
Damn straight.
All right, Wayne. How do people get in touch with us to let us know their feedback on the show or indeed contribute to topics week in and week out?
Google the Countdown Podcast and you will find everything about us on all the socials or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We are on Twitter at TheCountdownPC. We host our show through Podbean, which you can like there and make some comments on the show and our website that we share with the awesome folks at CC Radio. So Comic Confidential Radio Network, ccradio.com.au. Check out the new shows, Fangirling and Fightcast Australia, and say goodbye to Comic Confidential, the original show, which is leaving us in the next week or two. All right, Wayne, what's happening next week for episode 238 of The Countdown?
Obviously, I don't know. All right. Oh no! Next week we're gonna do the top 10 horror comedies.
Yeah.
Why the fuck did I let you do that?
Because it's fucking Halloween, dude, and you need to acknowledge it as such. It's an important holiday for a lot of our listeners. And for the record, I'll also be releasing this coming week the top 10 horror films of the 2010s, which I didn't put Wayne through, but I did get good friend Sam from the Movie Reviews and 20 Qs.
You're the man, Sam.
We're going to release it on both feeds, his show and our show as well. So check it out there and we can talk a lot of horror in a much more reasonable way than if I had to talk about it with Wayne, as you will learn next week.
Nice.
All right then, that is it for this week's episode. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard throwing a lot of shade at Wayne for his choice of the Red Sea Diving Resort over El Camino.
Good that you have
fuck
to
you, fuckball.
A lot of explanation for that one, gotta say.
You dirty
huge setup.
Slime, you scum sucking
and
pig,
another long piece
you
of
son
shit.
Of a motherless
still going, because it's that.
We will catch you next time. All right, Wayne, what's happening next week for episode 238 of The Countdown?
Obviously, I don't know. I don't know who the fuck you think you're talking to.
Oh, looks like we're back to elevator music.
No, don't. You always play that for too long.
Oh, ironically, it's less time than I wait for this.
Fuck you! Three notes, bitch! Three notes! And then I cuntingly over the wrong one. You fucking...